has been a while since I visited PI. It's always wonderful to be here. Also, thank you all for coming, many of you from the UK, to be here today. So it's an exciting week of sciences, and I know we're all looking forward to it, but I have to say a little bit of how this program comes about. I have to talk a bit about politics, a couple of slides, and then we talk about the wonderful sciences. So as you can see, I changed the title already a little bit. It's quantum technology or quantum simulators for fundamental physics. And quantum simulator for fundamental physics, for the ones who are not part of this already, this is this UK-wide network plus wonderful external partners. And I would like to tell you a little bit about how, where this comes about, how we got it funded, and where we are right now. And then, of course, about the exciting science we want to see. Okay, so quantum technology, that comes, of course, from, everyone has heard about this. Quantum technology is this new kind of technology that should revolutionize many aspects of life. And quantum technology, for example, includes computing, cryptography, imaging, measurement, sensors, and simulations. And particularly relevant for us are measurement and simulations. And all of this comes recently has also been summarized in a very sensible document that the UK government put forward where they talk about the UK National Quantum Strategy. That was just recently published. I think it's a very well-written document, a very sensible document. And what you see here, which is this positive news, that there's a doubling of investment from previously 1 billion investment to 2.5 billion. And this is a 10-year vision plan. And it is talking about how we can grow knowledge and skills in the UK and getting ready for quantum technology, how attract companies and investors, of course, and adaptation and use of quantum technology, and also, of course, to develop the laws and the regulatory framework to open the ways for these new exciting sciences. So, however, somewhere if you read through this document, unfortunately not on page one, but somewhere along the line, they talk about investment in quantum technology for fundamental physics. And then what is stated there, this is a quantum is a tool for wider research and the international partnerships which are possible. This is also why we're here today. And then secure development and employment, attract people working on this exciting field. So this is somehow, which I think is a wonderful development in the UK of actually having this mentioned in the strategy as something important, something that needs to be invested in. Okay, so quantum technology, quantum simulators for fundamental physics, our network has been funded through a program that's called Quantum Technology for Fundamental Physics. And what this was a 40 million program to transform our approach, the way we do this, to understand the universe and its evolution. And Quantum Technologies for Fundamental Physics, this first program was to demonstrate how these quantum technologies could really solve some of the greatest mysteries in fundamental physics. For example, the search for dark matter is a candidate which is heavily explored, nature of gravity, and so forth. And so for this, they funded seven large programs and many more smaller programs. And the first seven programs, which sort of have this daunting task to demonstrate that it works, these are listed here. And as you can see, neutrino mass, absolute neutrino mass, quantum sensors for the hidden sectors, atom interferometry, and so forth. And then here on the bottom, this is quantum simulators for fundamental physics. So this is how we could get that funded. This is how we fit into the bigger picture. Okay, so now comes more, we're getting slower, slowly but steadily to the fun part of this talk about our network here. This is a UK-wide network, and within the UK, we have the seven research organizations, which are nicely spread out over the UK. And so our scientific goals are to deliver quantum simulations of black hole and early universe processes. And the community is a 50-50 quantum tech and fundamental physics researchers, which is wonderful because now you have a program where people can be funded at the same time. The governments, that's besides myself, that's Ruth Gregory, who is here today. I don't know where Ruth is sitting. Or maybe she had to leave. She had a talk, take a meeting. And Soren Hadjibabic, who unfortunately couldn't be here today. Okay, So what was the goal? The goal was to set up experimental facilities in the UK, so at four places. That was in St. Andrews, Königsfrieder, Nottingham, Cambridge, and Royal Holloway, London. And we're going to have a sneak peek into the labs in the next few slides. What is absolutely crucial here is that modeling, so we have this high-level modeling support from the fundamental physicists, and what you see here is that, for example, Carlo, I'm struggling a bit with the remote thing, that Carlo Varenghi is visiting the Nottingham lab, and Hiranya is visiting Soren's lab, so and it's bringing really together theorists and experimentalists. Okay, so since 2021, where are we now? So we have set up these experimental facilities, they're all up and running. We have one patent application, 17 publications, 18 preprints, thank you to the theorists, two feature news articles, and four quantum simulators. So I think within 2 years, that's quite a wonderful achievement. Okay, so experimental facilities, as I mentioned, we have four facilities in the UK, and we have one external partner, and that's Jörg Schmidmeier, and Jörg, thankfully also made it from, not from the UK, but from Austria. And I would like to tell you a bit about what kind of experimental facilities we have set up. So the first one is in St. Andrew, that's Friedrich König. The enabling technology there is fiber optical solitons, to set up optical black hole simulators. And for this, he had to build some quantum detectors, which he built already. So what he's interested in this light and the quantum fluctuations of light, and he built some very nice, I think we will hear more about that later on, we'll get some more details about this wonderful quantum detectors he built for his optical black holes. So then going down from starting from the north, making my way down to the south, the next lab that is the one I'm involved in Nottingham, and besides myself, there is Anthony Kent from the experimental side. And the enabling technology here is ultra-cold systems technology, flow shaping techniques, and holographic sensors. And the status at the moment, what we're doing, we're setting up superfluid bathtub vortex flows, and in particular, we're interested in irrotational vortex flow. We reached that in May this year. We have interface detection method implemented, and we have one patent application for an off-axis holography method. And what we're interested in is the vortex flow forms a free surface, and we're interested in the wave-vortex interactions in this system. And Patrick will give a talk about this. Let me see if I can do this. No, there should be a video, but I don't know how to run it. Well, Patrick will show you all about this. This is a reconstruction of the waves interacting with the vortex flow. Okay. So then we move on further to the south, to Soren Hachibabic lab in Cambridge. Here, the enabling technology is ultra-cold atoms systems. These are quantum gases in optical box traps. So he traps the atoms with light, and he has achieved, he has developed this technology previously. And for this, we allow to set a very homogeneous ultra-cold atom systems, very homogeneous superfluid flows, which is a very important aspect of our program. So Soren is doing fantastically well. He, as planned, that's always wonderful. At the end of last year, he promised he will have his first BSc, and he managed to do this. And then what experimentalists do in the BSc world is when they have a BSc, they put a sheet of their data on the front showing we have a Bose-Einstein condensate, and it's wonderful, it's going really well. And at the moment, what they're doing, they're preparing the transfer of this BSc to the trap where the box trap is. So to then shape the BSc in arbitrary form. And this is, here is this cell where they're setting up, this box trap in here. So wonderful progress, I should mention, this has really started from scratch with an empty table, more or less. It's very impressive how they're progressing in Cambridge. So, and then this comes to our last lab, that is the Royal Holloway Royal Holloway University London. That is Xavier Rojas there, you see also in the picture here. And enabling technology, again, is state-of-the-art nanotechnology facilities, nanofluidic devices, and superconducting microwave microstructures. So, and I will not tell too much about this. Xavier is here, and I'm sure he will give us a progress report. It's also going fantastically well, really exciting experiments, and we're working closely with Nottingham and Holloway together. Difference are really just we are both working with superfluid helium systems, but in Nottingham, we're working with larger system at higher temperature, and Xavier has a daunting task to go colder and much more intricate setups. Okay, so what is the dream? The dream is to investigate two really important processes when it comes to quantum field theory, relativistic quantum field theory, or quantum field theory on a curved space-time geometry. In particular, we are interested in the quantum vacuum, the false vacuum decay, and there will be many wonderful talks about this. And then we will also hear about quantum black holes, and in particular, black hole ringdowns. Okay, so I talked about all the experimental facilities over here, but the other part of this, which I mentioned before, is really crucial, is the modeling support from the fundamental physicists. Now, I have to apologize, I didn't add everyone here. There are many more students involved, but I tried to use the whole page here, but as you can see, there is a huge modeling effort that goes into this, helping us experimentalists to understand of if to map whatever happens in these systems to fundamental physics questions. Okay, so as I mentioned before, thanks to the series, is a very active community with many, many publications already produced in the first 2 years. We sort of have like one paper every month, which I think is wonderful. Just to give you an idea, so the red one, this is a slide which I usually present to the oversight committee every 3 months, and one wonders how much progress can there be in 3 months, and all the red entries are really what has changed since the last oversight committee meeting. Papers have been published, new papers occurred, still new collaborations occurring, so it's really wonderful. Active and collaborative community. This was our last meeting in London at the IOP, and I just wanted to show, so this is where we took this wonderful community picture, and this is, IOP is really a wonderfully modern space in the center of London. It's really wonderful to have this facility. And if you look at, for example, we did a bit of statistics. In fact, that's Raffaele Raup, who is a project manager based at UCL. She's done a wonderful job helping us to set up this event. And we did a bit of a statistic to see how we're doing as a community. And what is nice to see that, for example, female-male representation, not too bad, could be better, but it's a good start. We also looked at how young we are, of course, like PhD students, postgraduate student, postdoctoral researchers, and faculty position. And as you can see, two-thirds are young people, which is wonderful, because these are the next generations. Okay, so how am I doing time-wise, Matt? Fantastic. So I talked up our consortia, I think it's clear by now. But I want to also talk a bit about the science which we're going to see here this week, and for the ones which are new to it, how can we have superfluid helium ultracold atom systems, and how can we map that to anything relevant for fundamental physics studies related to the early universe? So we have this, what we call gravity simulators. And gravity simulators, that is something Bill Unruh started many years ago, and ever since sort of the class of analog gravity systems that we are analyzing is growing and growing. And I'd like to give you a bit of an idea how much of early universe physics can be reproduced in tabletop experiments as such, the ones I shown on earlier. So we are interested in quantum field theory. And when it comes to quantum field theory, for anything interesting to happening, you have to either have interacting fields, field modes are interacting with each other. This can lead to interesting scattering process, particle physics, or also you can investigate metastable initial states. And this is what's also dubbed as the false vacuum decay. So you can have a relativistic field theory, and if you start off with a metastable state, these field theories can trigger some nonlinearities and fields can interact and interesting physics can occur. However, even if you have non-interacting fields, doesn't mean it's necessarily boring. It depends, depends on the details on which background these quantum fields are residing on. And for example, you can have a curved space-time geometry, or simply you can ask yourself, when are particles present or when they're absent, that's referred to as the Unruh effect. So in short, quantum field theories are super interesting, super important for early universe, particularly early universe and also late universe physics. Okay, so I have to have one slide just to tell you how you get this analog system, so how you can have, for example, curved space-time geometries in superfluids. And I will do this very briefly and very ad hoc, but it's important. So non-interacting field dynamics on curved space-times. How do we set up quantum field theory on a curved space-time geometry? Now, we all know this wave equation here. And for example, if I look at light, and then here I have the speed of light here would be c. And I have this wave equation here, which is hyperbolic and second order in up to a partial differential equation up to second order time and space derivatives. Now, this simple wave equation, I can write on introducing a flat space-time geometry, the Minkowski space-time geometry. And now I have written down this relativistic formulation here, this Klein-Gordon equation, massless Klein-Gordon equation. And what we are saying, so how does this field propagation change if instead of a flat space-time geometry, you have a general curved space-time geometry? And the way we go about, we are doing this ad hoc replacement, this substitution from eta AB, a flat space-time geometry, to a general curved space-time geometry. And here, of course, we made some assumption which is referred to as minimal coupling, and that you only couple to the metric itself, the fields. So there are some thoughts going into it, but already at that level, you can see sort of that is the minimal substitution, an ad hoc way to describe how fields would propagate around a curved space-time geometry, as for example, around a black hole. So, and classical and quantum field theory around curved space-time really matters. And why does it matter? Because although these effects are really, really small, they tell us, for example, what the end state of a black hole would be. For example, can a black hole evaporate away its mass, a process dubbed as Hawking radiation? You can also ask, how do black holes interact with their environment to lose their angular momentum, a process dubbed as superradiance? And then, of course, you can ask yourself, how could from nothing it come everything about? How could in the early universe, after the Big Bang, for example, the large-scale structure of the universe form? And particularly, how does quantum fluctuations get amplified and affected by a rapid expansion of the universe? And this, again, is linked to quantum field theory on curved spacetimes. And then, of course, the last effect, I know Bill doesn't like the picture, I do very much. The last effect is, how do we really make sense on a curved spacetime geometry about the presence and absence of particles? And that's the Unruh effect. How do you, what is a particle? How do you define a particle? And you have to define a particle detector and you have to study the details of this detector. And it depends on the state of the detector, if the detector is an inertial observer or an accelerated observer, and the two will not necessarily agree on the presence or absence of particles. So this is a wonderfully interesting theory already if we're just looking at non-interacting fields. But what's the problem here is with all of this is that there is a need or a lack of cross-validation between this wonderful theory, these wonderful abstract ideas, and experiment and observation. And this is where Bill comes in 1980. He told me he was giving a lecture in fluid dynamics, and he thought about sound propagation in fluid flow. And he had this following idea, and I don't know if the video will work. So he looked at sound waves, and he was thinking, well, what if I were to stick a little speaker into my fluid flow? And let's say I'm around here, stick a speaker in, and I see how sound waves propagate in the bulk of the flow. Now, the fluid flow is accelerating here to the left. And so what is, of course, the propagations that propagate with the flow propagate further in distance in the equal time than the ones that propagate against the flow. Now, suppose this fluid flow hypothetically would become supersonic. And let's say I just put a little speaker right at the point at the area where the fluid flow is normal to the fluid flow is equal to the sound velocity everywhere, and I start to look at sound waves. And then, of course, what's happening, the sound waves counter-propagate, they get all swapped downstream. And this was this first realization that, oh, perhaps this could be mapped onto some sort of effective space-time geometry as provided by the fluid flow. And what Bill then did is he linearized the Navier-Stokes equations, throw a lot of details and a lot of unwanted things away. For example, treated the fluid flow as an irrotational fluid and looked at inviscid systems, so really simplified Navier-Stokes a lot. But then by looking at the small perturbations, he could rewrite them in a form as such as I presented on the previous slide. Now here, this chi ab is an effective metric geometry as provided by the fluid flow. So this was sort of the first idea of perhaps you could use these fluid flows to investigate really exotic effects such as the Hawking effect. Okay, so now since then, the field really has moved on. In a sense, it has grown, and the realizations which systems can actually provide such quantum field theory on a curved space-time description. And in particular, maybe we should have a short discussion on what is this field psi here that I'm sticking in this equation. So we know that this GIB is an effective metric geometry, but what is this psi field? And in particular, this psi field is a perturbation in the scala which provides the velocity field. So how do I get the velocity field from the scala? Well, I take the gradient of that. And so here, this is a visualization of the streamlines in a fluid flow, and we're looking at the perturbations of the streamlines. So we're not necessarily, but also looking at density perturbations, we're looking at perturbations in the velocity field. And so, as I said, in Navier-Stokes equation, to look at sound waves in system, Navier-Stokes equation, small perturbations in the Navier-Stokes equations. Then we can look at the Gross-Peter-Yevsky equations, which are sound waves in quantum fluids, in superfluids. And it was also found that they, in fact, are more naturally mapped on this easy and this simple equation here because they are irrotational. And so these are ideal fluids. And in a way, the analogy holds best the more ideal these fluids are. So you can have sound waves in normal fluids and sound waves in superfluids would fall under this analog gravity simulators. But then you can also look at coupled Navier-Stokes equations. So why is that interesting? If you have two sets of Navier-Stokes equations, they can be immiscible and they can form an interface. These interface waves have a very different dynamics, different dispersion relation, different propagating degrees of freedom. But this interface, again, can be mapped onto this effective field theory description. And then, of course, you can ask yourself, this is for normal fluids, what about superfluids? And a superfluid, helium, for example, provides both quantized sound waves and quantized interface perturbations. So this is what I'm interested in, and Xavier is interested in. We are interested in liquid helium. And again, there you can find various ways to look at black hole evaporation or black hole geometries, field theory on black hole geometries, or early universe geometries. Okay, so gravity simulators, the key is how tunable are they? And as I mentioned already, so we get this effective space-time geometry coming out, and you can have a flat space-time that you will get in a homogeneous static fluid. So homogeneity, for example, is very important, and it sometimes makes it very difficult to trap these superfluids to have a nice homogeneous background density, for example. Then if you're interested in black hole horizon, you need to have stationary fluid flows. This is, for example, an effective metric tensor that you get for stationary fluid flows. So, and in so I should mention that the C here is not the speed of light. The C would be the propagation speed of your sound waves or interface waves in your system. And if you want to mimic cosmology, you have to have some time-dependent propagation speed in the system, and we will hear more about that also, for example, Markus Obertaler's talk. Now, what you can do, of course, also you can ask yourself, so this is this effective metric you are getting, but you can also investigate how does the signature of spacetime come about, and what you can do, you can switch from Euclidean to Lorentzian spacetime, so you can go from elliptic equations to hyperbolic equations, by simply making the sound speed in the system imaginary. Of course, that's elliptic equations are unstable, so if you stay there for too long, you just have exponentially growing modes in time, and the whole system will alter unstable. Now, this is not all of it, and if you ask me, could you write down the Lagrangian for these systems where you take more of the details into account? And this is a Lagrangian, it's a sort of a general Lagrangian for these analog space-time geometries, and so you have your kinetic term, it can have masses, this mass can be stable or unstable, and then you can, or metastable, so, and then you can have particle detectors, you can couple to these perturbations in the velocity fields or to density perturbation in the systems, and you can think about how you use local interactions to extract, to set up particle detectors to investigate the Unruh effect. But then this is not all of it, because of course these are interacting modes. And usually, or at the beginning, we always threw this term away. And this is of course a simplification. And you can also drive yourself into a situation where the mode-mode interaction becomes important and interesting. And then you can investigate scattering and back reaction, for example, back reaction of the fluctuations in the system onto the background geometry. Okay, and I'm running out of time slowly. How much time do I have? 5 minutes. So I just want to say, so what are we interested? The physics, we're interested in terms on the black hole side. Well, we're interested in rotating black holes. And rotating black holes, similar to non-rotating black holes, they exhibit Hawking radiation, but because of the rotation, you also exhibit other effects, such as, for example, super radiance. And it has been shown previously, actually in my group over the last 10 years, that if you use stationary draining fluid flows, you get many of the physics back that are supposed to occur around rotating black holes. So for example, super radiance around this analog rotating black holes, but also another process which is related to the black hole ring down. So when a black hole, for example, when two black holes merge and they form a single black hole, they are not quite done. They give off some gravitational waves in the black hole case, which carries off this last energy they have to shine off, and this is referred to as the black hole ring down process, and fluid flows naturally exhibit this black hole ring down effect. And our goal is to repeat these experiments, but in the quantum domain, in a situation where the circulation of the vortex flow is quantized. Okay, so non-equilibrium field theories, and I'm really coming to the end. So this is a picture, David Tong, I should actually credit from found on the website. So what can we do in terms of non-equilibrium field theory simulators? So one of the things we previously did is to investigate two fluid interfaces. And what we did is we wanted to deliberately drive the system into the non-interacting regime, where non-linearities in the field theory matters. And in particular, we wanted to see what happens in this mode, what happens to these modes, and could I map them to some physics relevant for the early universe, in particular preheating. So what did we do? We looked at immiscible two fluid systems, two coupled Navier-Stokes equation. So we have two fluids, one on the top and one on the bottom. They don't mix just like oil and water. It's not oil and water, they are carefully chosen. They are closed and dust-free system. And then we built some state-of-the-art mechanical acceleration platform, which would allow us to repeat these experiments many, many times, here being 1,500 times, so it would run for days. We would build a state-of-the-art interface sensor to map out this interface. As here, this is a reconstruction from our experimental setup. And what you see, we would get that in the micrometer, tens of micrometers is our where our detection sensitivity starts. It would have this automated work cycle, and then we would develop some techniques to extract how field modes grow in this system. And what we do on this shake on this platform is we would this is showing you the force on the shaker, the amplitude field. So we would start shaking the system. We ramp it up to some amplitude, keep it, and then we would switch it off again. And what we see here in this log plot, this is the amplitude of a dominant mode excited in the system. These are 1,500 repetitions. And what you see is there are two typical trajectories, which we highlighted here. And the first one here, where there was more noise in the initial state, would grow out of the system. You have an exponentially growing mode with m equal 4. So you see it has four crests here around. And then what you see is, although the shaker still goes on, and Fourier analysis predicts that there should be an exponential growth, this growth comes to a halt. And this halt is due to nonlinearities, nonlinear damping. But beyond that, what you can see is that a secondary mode is forming. The secondary is a phi to the 4 scattering process. And it can predict which growth rate this should have. So here now we have a simulator where initially you have this exponential growth as predicted by Fourier analysis, but then you can investigate how this mode spreads further to other modes and interesting scattering processes, just as they are studied in early universe cosmology. This is a wonderful tool. We are now also investigating what's happened further in the nonlinearity if you get then universal behavior, and it seems to be the case. Okay, so I'm running out of time, but and theorists will do a much better job in explaining this, but one really, really interesting and much an effect called as the false vacuum decay is a nonlinear field theory process in the quantum domain, and it's really hard to study this through analytics and through standard computation. So we use this analog simulator, this gravity simulator, this quantum simulators to investigate this first order relativistic phase transition. And we have many, many talks about this. Alex will be talking about, Ian will be talking about, Tom will be talking about. I think also Ralph has something relevant for tunneling. So we will hear a lot of wonderful results on the false vacuum decay using ultra-cold atom system. Okay, so I am really running out of time, and I have to choose where I'm going, but okay, so I just want to talk a tiny bit more about the drivers and methodology behind this. So we have, on the one side, we have superfluids, so optical systems, and a field theory. And we are interested in this cross-validation between the effective field theory and methods and toolboxes developed. So we want to understand these systems to a much better degree. On the other hand, we have quantum field theory in curved space-time or relativistic quantum field theory. And we have a need for experimental verification. How can we turn these ideas into reality? How can we study them in the time domain and in a full quantum setup? And so what brings these fields together are these field theory simulators, linear and nonlinear field theory simulators. And what it is, it develops this wonderful toolboxes and mathematics developed on this side. It allows it to apply it for the superfluids, but it also allows us to develop simulations of these effects and to study them in a real-life system. And then, of course, in order to do this, we really have to go way and beyond. We have to, because these effects, these are fragile effects in these quantum systems, so what you really need to develop or use are quantum technologies, as for example, Soren Hadjibabic Boxtrap, which is an essential tool for simulating the false vacuum decay in the lab. And now we had one patent application, but you know what? I'm saving you this. Just two words. We in Nottingham are interested in mapping out thin film helium structures and interface waves thereof. And these are helium is a partially transparent media. and how do you really, how can you map that out below nanometer precision? That's sort of our task. And what we did, we developed what's called a method, an off-axis holography method that allows us to deal with all the unwanted reflections that you get, turn it into advantage, and instead of having one reconstruction of this interface, we get multiple because we're able to pick out which reflections, for example, if it's directly light reflected on the top surface or on a bottom mirror, or which light passes go several times through the fluids, we can all separate them out with a simple trick and with some shabby software, and then we can use this to map out these fluids. And this we want to implement then in a 300 millikelvin scheme. It's a new, our new cryostat, which we've ordered recently and will receive by the end of the year, also funded through this program. So very grateful for this. Okay. Right, so we're coming to the end. Going beyond science, making a difference. How can we make a difference with this program? How can we give back to the UK community, sciences, and beyond? And the first thing I want to say, well, quantum simulators for fundamental physics unites new communities. And so in order to cultivate this interaction across the consortia, we have workshops, biannual consortium meetings. Many of you have presented on it, and we're very thankful and grateful for that. And bi-weekly seminar series, that's what I meant, where people, many of you contributed already. This is an online series. We have many consortium meetings. So we also have heavy reporting, which initially seemed a bit annoying if you have to meet every 3 months and have an oversight committee meeting on top of a report. But it also actually is useful to see where we are and to stay on top of things. We also have a fantastic international advisory board, which once a year gives us some really valuable feedback. Now, as I mentioned before, QCMFP is part of a wider landscape, and that is quantum technology for fundamental physics. And this is really wonderful to also have this bigger structure, because on top of that, we have an annual winter school, which has now happened 3 or 4 times already. We have a QTFP engagement event, like a community meeting where we get together, and already across the various 7 projects, new collaborations have formed. We have a Stolas, a National Quantum Technology Showcase, that gave us the idea to actually put in a patent to make our sensor a standalone device and put a patent application in. And we're also planning joint outreach events. And so, and of course, this QTFP is part of the National Quantum Technology Program. And there, of course, we need to also gather and prepare white papers, which we have written many, many. I think this year it was already 3 or 4. It's never ending, really. We have regular meetings and, as I said, joint engagement activities. Okay, and one of the things we want to address really is this lack of the future talent workforce in quantum. And I think, like, when you talk about using quantum technologies for the black hole or the early universe, you really get people's attention and they get excited about the topic. And this is a promise, one before the last slide. So, what we want to do, making a positive difference, how do we get kids excited about that? In Nottingham recently, we had 60 kids in our labs. It was fantastic, also a lot of work. Thanks to all the young people there, postdocs and students who really set that up. And then training of young scientists, so schools and workshops, inspiring the next generations, kids on campus, virtual, we want to create virtual laboratory tours of the QTFP facilities. And in particular, and we will have another talk about this, we as a consortium want to set up a bespoke art science exhibition that will take place from January till March 2025. And with that, I want to thank Matt and the PI for hosting this event. We're very, very grateful. It was a lot of work, and we really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay. Can you, my other mic thrower, please go over there. So if you have questions, raise your hand and I'll bring the mic around. One of us will bring the mic around. You can throw them. They're soft.
Hi, Silke. So my question is about these kind of possibilities. Well, in the examples you described, the metric was kind of external, if I understand correctly. So it's something that you set by the flow, and then you consider propagation of like perturbations on top of it. So is there a way to make metric dynamical and kind of have like really graviton excitation, like spin to excitation or something like that? And in particular, there were works, series of works by Volovic, whom you mentioned in the context of liquid helium, that in liquid helium 3, one can do something like that. So what is your take on that? And yeah.
So, okay. So the question is, so here we have, we're assuming some set background metric, and we have fluctuations involving on top of this background structure provided by the fluids. Now, it is actually, as I pointed out, the field modes are interacting with the background. They're changing the background. And in particular, you have scattering between fluctuations and the zero mode. So these background metrics, we want to believe, we want to think of them as something we have 100% control over, but it's not quite that, not quite true. And there is always a little bit of a time evolution anyway provided. Now, this is small, so you should think about a metric tensor that slowly evolves in time. You could make it big, but then you have to question if the split background and perturbation is still valid. So one of the things people are now investigating, what is the back action of the fluctuations on the metric? Now, it's there. It can be calculated. It can be seen. We've done an experiment. I think also Future Horizon can be seen in a quantum experiment. And you could, for example, test how, imagine like you have, you set up the Hawking process and you have these entangled pairs of phonons produced, but then perhaps they also interact with the background. And the question is what happens with this entanglement? So you could ask something a bit more modest, which definitely can be done, which is a reasonable thing. Now then you can say, could I do something better? Now the overall dynamic, so this metric field is not something that has its own dynamics like normal metric spacetimes have in general relativity. There have been discussions. I think it started with Wen, who set up these quantum rotor models. One problem that always has been there, when you have a condensed matter system that has a spin two excitations, which would sort of be what you need, a spin two excitation, you also get the spin one and spin zero excitations. You have everything. The GR is really, really special. Mm-hmm. So you have this extra propagating degrees of freedom, and then he found some arguments in ways how they should not be in the system. So there were some ideas. Grisha Wolowicz's work in superfluid helium. So superfluid helium is a really cool system because it's really hard, the effective field theory. And what means hard means there's perhaps more you can do with this. And Grisha has a bigger vision and a bigger picture about this, and this is summarized in the Helium in a Droplet, or the Universe in a Helium Droplet, the book. I have a copy of that. And you can, there are some attempts to say, let me write down a stress energy tensor of that metric, which you can always do because I can calculate it. The question is the meaning of this. I have to say, I personally see that helium has a very rich structure and potentially could offer more. I personally don't see at this point how this exactly works. Mm-hmm. But you would need to go beyond what we have here. I would say maybe Bianca can also chime in, Ralph, spin two excitation would be a start. Do I see this right or Bill? I don't know. We can have a debate about this. I think you need a spin two excitation. And then maybe you can bootstrap your way to linearized TR or something.
Right. So are there systems with spin two excitations, actual systems, or it's just speculation so far? Are there actual systems with spin two excitations, or that's a speculation so far?
These quantum rotor models are very hypothetical, right? Who is aware of the work? Who can help me out here? So I think the quantum rotor is hypothetical, and with Grisha's work, I'm not sure. I don't understand enough about helium 3.
Thanks.
Go ahead. And then this will be the last question, I think, in the time. Yeah, please.
Thank you for the talk. I have a question about the measurement. You showed a very general Lagrangian, and you mentioned measurement, which is, of course, non-unitary. My question is that whether you have simulated phase transition induced by measurement or not. Because probably the cold atoms are very sensitive, and probably the rate of measurement has induced some disturbance to your system.
So it's a very good point. You want to measure a quantum field. You change a quantum field, but also how you, if you put the probes in there and, for example, change the background itself, as, for example, light interacting with helium has, there will be electrostriction happening or with superfluid, with ultracold atom systems, so atoms want to move in or out of the light. And so you have to worry about that. You also have to worry really about that, not that these equations stay valid. And then on top of that, you have to worry about if you inject some fluctuations, for example, into the system through this measurement process, which you will, and then how will this spread in the systems? Because you have a quantum field theory in a box, so it cannot just trail off to infinity. It will scatter back on the boundaries of your box, so you have to worry about back action. This is what comes out as simplified modeling, but hasn't, you know, if this holds in a real laboratory setup, has yet to be shown. So yes, it's a measuring process in a quantum system. You have to worry about every single detail. Now, one thing is you may not want to have this go for the holy grail right away and say, what if I have a system, an analog gravity system, at a finite temperature, background temperature, and Cameron will be talking more about this. What happens to the Andrew effect if you start with not the quantum vacuum, but with the thermal state? Are there some remnants left? The answer is yes. So then already, you know, you don't have quite such a fragile state, initial state. So confident that we will see something, but this is really technically challenging.
Thank you.
Okay, let's thank Silke again.